Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on the Age of Heroes, I am proud to bring you the art of healing with the ever-inspiring and always motivating Kak Young. Greetings and welcome, Kak. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you, Hercules, and thank you for, giving me the challenge to be inspiring. I appreciate that.
You never disappoint.
Great. Well, is our guest here, Hercules?
I believe so.
He is.
Good. Well, I want to welcome Judy Wilkins-Smith to the show tonight. She's a highly regarded organizational individual and family patterns expert, a systemic executive coach, a trainer, a facilitator, a thought partner, and has leadership conference and motivational speaking, and she also, with 18 years of expertise in assisting high-performance individuals, Fortune 500 executives, and legacy families to end limiting cycles and reframe the challenges into lasting breakthroughs and peak performances. She resides near Dallas, Texas. Judy, please welcome to our show.
Hi, Kak. It is lovely to be with you. It's hot, but it's lovely to be with you.
Yes. I do know that. You are in the South. Well, Judy, your book is a breakthrough book. I read a lot of books, and certainly I digest them for the show, but this one is just absolutely mind-bending. And I think it has been said about your book, and I want to talk a little bit about what other people have said, that it's a compelling new model for healing, that it brings the wisdom of the ancients and modern science together. You turn tragedies into strengths and create an authentic journey of transformation. Every human being on the planet is shaped by invisible patterns of thoughts, language, feelings, and the actions of their ancestors. They end up in the unconscious in our lives, and this is a fast track to healing. You've called it disentangling multi-generational patterns. So how do you want your book to change the world?
I want more than anything for people to realize that they're never stuck. Never stuck. If they know how to look at the patterns in their family system and they begin to understand what they're a part of, literally the family system keeps trying to help you to move ahead. Because when you do, it does. So it gives you all the clues you need to take what looks like a train smash or a junk pile with lots of hidden gems and turn those into the strengths and the gifts they were always meant to be. You are never stuck. You are not a train wreck.
So we shouldn't blame our parents, blame our family for what's wrong in our lives.
No. Because what they've done is they've passed those patterns down and done what they could with them, and now they're sitting in your hands waiting for you to be the change agent and to upgrade them. So no, you don't get to blame them. You only get to thank them.
Okay, then. Wow. See, there's the upending right there. Could you define emotional DNAs for us, Judy?
Sure. So emotional DNA is, okay, so you know with physical DNA, it doesn't matter whether you know your parents or not, you inherit physical DNA. What most people don't realize is you also, whether you know your family or not, inherit patterns of thoughts, feelings, actions, inactions, reactions, and those cycle all the way down to you. They're frequently triggered by an event in the system and the reactions, decisions that are made about that event that then become thoughts, feelings, and actions. And they create what epigeneticists call an imprint on the system that then becomes the blueprint for generations of behaviors.
So what our ancestors have given us that we have looked at as limitations and problems and the short end of the stick, we should turn those into gifts and look at how we can accept that and then change them and move forward. Am I correct?
Yes, sort of. In fact, that's pretty close. But here's what's happening. When you have a pattern that feels very limiting for you or a situation, there are usually two patterns sitting side by side. One that's outlived its purpose and needs to stop, and one that's trying to start. The one that's outlived its purpose will usually attract your attention by becoming that thing that irritates you, that upsets you, that makes you feel stuck. It's telling you, I'm done. Put me down. And when you put it down, listen to your heart, because there is something else that you wish you could do with a pattern like that. My relationships all fail. I would love to have a good relationship. So when you set down the my relationships all fail pattern and pattern of thoughts, feelings, and actions, what you open your heart, your brain, and your gut to is, so what would it look like if I had a different relationship, different to the ones or the patterns that exist in my family? And so that new pattern is trying to start and emerge through you. So you're being given clues all the time.
Okay, now how do we, or how does one, go about recognizing the patterns that they have because of their family?
So a number of ways. One of the ones is to recognize that there are things that you are very dogmatic about. Where did that come from? Things that really, really irritate, anger, or upset you. Where did that come from? Things that you will only do a certain way because that's the way so-and-so says. Well, who is so-and-so? So you start looking at things like money, relationships, leadership. What are my thoughts around money, relationships, leadership? Where did those first start? What was happening in my life at the time? Who told me to think that? Why did I think that? Did mom or dad think that? Or if I'm really struggling, am I the first one to struggle like this? Did mom or dad? Did my grandparents? Was there an uncle or an aunt? Is there someone, and this is very important, is there someone in the family system who has been excluded? Maybe they were the black sheep of the family. Maybe something horrible happened and we don't talk about it, and so they become excluded. And what we know is that family systems don't tolerate that. They're always looking for balance. So they go seeking that by emerging that same lifestyle and set of patterns through someone else later down in the system. So if you've got something that's idiosyncratic for you and you don't understand why you struggle with it, go and have a look who that struggle may belong to. It may not be yours.
Okay. So if I want to look at my systems and look at what I think we all could make a quick list of what creates anxiety for us or anger
right.
us. Yes. Now, what do I do with that? Do I make a list? What do I do?
So here's what you do. You write down, let's take money. You write down everything that you think about money. Then you ask yourself, when did I start thinking about money this way? What did I tell myself about money? What is my relationship like with money? Am I the only one with that relationship? Or did mom or dad have one like that? And if they did, what started it? Was there an event that we can point to that created that? And what were the decisions made? And are those decisions necessarily valid for me now? So, for example, grandfather loses all the money. Dad or great-grandfather loses all the money. Grandfather is very, very risk-averse. Dad won't budge when it comes to money because he's also risk-averse. I walk in and I go, oh, my goodness, look at these opportunities. But every time I want to have an opportunity or take an opportunity, I hear, don't do that. You know, we don't do that in this family. You see what happens when you're careless with money. And so I stop. But if I look at that and go back and see what happened to grandfather, that or great-grandfather, that was his event. And the learning there is I see what happened to you. and that can't be me. That's not me. Thank you for everything that I could learn there. Now let me do it differently. But let me learn how to invest wisely. Let me learn to bring the wealth back into the family. That's my job. So we begin to turn it around.
Okay, so you say, I'll show you how to make the invisible visible.
Yep.
What does that mean, and how does that help someone?
Okay, so here's what we're sort of popping into is a constellation. And a constellation in this language means a grouping of elements within a system that has a common base. So in a family system, that would be mom, dad, sisters, brothers. In a business, that would be something entirely different. But when you're having a look and I say, I will show you how to make the invisible visible, what we tend to do is we problem solve in our minds and our hearts and our gut. That's where we look at things. We may even write it down and journal it. We're still not seeing it. It's when we break out that issue into all its components. So perhaps there's an issue involving mom, dad, sister, brother, me. And we write down mom on a piece of paper, dad on a piece of paper, sister on a piece of paper, brother on a piece of paper, me. Now, at a live event, I would be using live representatives to do this. So you get an even more expanded picture. But by simply using those pieces of paper, I then say to people, okay, now I want you to put an arrow at the top of each one because that makes it directional. And I want you to place those pieces of paper in relationship to one another the way that it is for you when you think about this issue. And that's pretty easy for us. We could say, well, mom and dad are always together, sisters over in the corner, brother and I are next to each other looking at mom and dad. But what that does immediately is it brings in your ability to see, to start to talk to it. You can hear it as you're talking. You can touch it. You can move them as the thoughts occur to you. And what you're doing is you've then created an interactive map and a multi-sensory way of exploring an issue. And so you begin to have different insights you would not have had, because in your head, you can't see the distance between some, the way that some are pointing into the circle and some out, the relationships between them. You can when you use those inanimate or objects or live representatives. So I then begin to say to them, if it's live representatives, why are they so far away? What happened? Oh, well, there was this event. Ah, so that's where your language comes from or your dislike. So now they're starting to put together the issue and their language around it as they see, literally see these figures in front of them. And because of that, they have a multi-sensory embodied experience of the issue, which frequently then allows them insights they didn't otherwise have and allows them to begin rewiring the brain.
That's remarkable. And anybody can do this.
Anybody can do this. It was one of the reasons I wrote the book, because I think for a while, and this certainly wasn't perpetuated by people who do the work, but I think for a long while there's sort of been this feeling of, well, you've got to go to a very special place and only special people can do it. And it's a tool that anybody can use, and you can begin to solve the most complex issues in less time than it takes to go for a really long walk in nature. You can look at those and actually begin to disentangle things because you're literally seeing it, speaking to it, walking on it, touching it, and having that multi-sensory embodied experience. And we call that, by the way, that aha moment.
Yes, yes. Can you tell us the story about Andrea and the leg braces?
Gosh, I've got to think about that because I have so many stories. But I think, as I recall, Andrea and the leg braces, yeah, she came down. She'd been wearing leg braces for most of her life. And she came to see me. And she said to me, the whole story is my mother and sister say, it's all in my mind. How dare they? And we had a look, and I said to her, when did that start for you? Well, when I was about 8. What happened when you were 8? Well, I came down the stairs. Mom and Dad were having a terrible fight. And they looked up at me and said to me, you had better choose who you're going with. And from then on in, she had to wear leg braces. She said, I've never understood. I said, I do. You literally had the legs knocked out from underneath you, didn't you? You had no support on either side. And to ask a child to make a choice is terrible. Who did you choose? And she said, I didn't. And I said, yes, you did. Because otherwise you wouldn't be in these. She said, I chose my father and then he died. And so I was really without support. And the leg braces were the support. So what we did was I took her back. I said to her, can we go back to you being 8 years old? Can we use representatives so that you can see that? And can you look at them standing there and hear them saying, choose one? And she said, yes. And I said, good. Now I want you to look at them and tell them, now I choose you both. And when she did that, that was it. She never needed leg braces again.
Now, some would call that a miracle, Judy.
You know what? I think we're full of miracles. We just have to learn to turn the keys to our miracles. They're all there.
Well, you do say in the book later that we are all magicians and wizards. So
incredible.
Yeah.
And I want to actually take you up on that piece where you said we're all magicians. Yes, we are. And that's crucial.
Yes.
It's a crucial part of this book.
We just don't know it. So your book, okay, now you say that our world, our whole world is a system. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so throughout the world, no matter where we are or who we are or what our ethnicity is or our culture is, we're part of systems, mothers, family systems, business systems. We're part of religious systems. We're part of cultural systems. We're part of national systems. And all of those join together to make a global system. So in one way or another, we're connected. And each of those systems has rules. And it's the way that we belong. And, of course, at the moment you can see a lot of chaos because a lot of people feel like they don't belong. So the route that the systems have to start expanding to incorporate and include everyone. But, yes, we are all part of a system, and all of the systems form meta-systems and subsystems all the way down to family systems and individuals.
Now, I love when you quote Bert Hellinger's work, the father of the systemic work, and he talks about lessons that he got from the Zulu. Can we go into that a little bit?
Yeah, the Zulus are quite something for me, too, I have to tell you. So, yes, he went down to South Africa, which is where I'm from. He went to South Africa to go and tame the Zulus, as he says, and then he says, but they tamed him. Because he discovered that in their tribe, any time there was a problem, they would go back into their family system to see which of the ancestors was disturbed. In other words, what wasn't at peace and what were they missing? So they were a profound influence for him. Now, interestingly enough, I had been doing this work for a little bit, and somebody said to me, well, of course you can do this work. And I said, why? And they said, because you come from South Africa, and that's where this comes from. I didn't know that at the time. And even more oddly, when I left, because I worked in a teaching hospital, and when I left to move here, the person who gave my farewell speech was a Zulu gentleman. And he said, you may be leaving us, but you will find a way to represent us in the world. And I just laughed. And now I do.
Well, he was a magician, just like you said.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I love this statement, too. The need to fit in to the family system is often greater than the need to be healthy and thrive. Oh, let's talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Do you know, I think it's one of Hellinger's, I think it's Stefan Hausner, who says, I will do what it takes, even if it costs me my life.
Mm.
We have a dream, we have a desire, and then we have parents. And we so much want to make sure that those parents are taken care of and that we belong in the system, that we will take over their dreams or we will refuse to honor ours so that we can belong as good children. And yet by doing that, we shrink the system instead of expanding it.
Well, he mentions that there are three principles, which I thought really just explained so much. He said number one is belonging. We all have that desire to belong to something. Two, there is always place and order within that system. And three, there's always a balance of giving and receiving.
Yes.
Do you agree with those? Is that what guides your work as well?
Oh, totally. Those are the three founding principles of systemic work. And in fact, when you're doing this process that we call a constellation, it's the turnkey piece. Because you know, once somebody starts to speak to you, exactly which of the three this is going to resolve into. You can hear from the language and you can watch. Now, sometimes it will change. But generally, you can hear, I don't belong, or I never know how to belong, or I'm always giving too much. So that is the entry point. The exit point for the constellation then is to bring balance, order, or belonging. And so this beautiful process unfolds, and by a series of movements and conversations with a client, it then begins to turn from that issue into the remarkable and beautiful gift that it's waiting to become. And so not belonging turns into, oh my goodness, look how I belong. Giving and receiving turns into, I too can receive. And order is, I keep putting you all in your place so that I can find mine. In my place, I can do remarkable things.
It is so beautifully simple, and I think that's what's extraordinary about this work that you
yes.
do and the book that you've written, is that it is very simple, and anyone can understand it. You don't have to have anima and animas and archetypes
Mm-mm.
and all of this. You just have three simple principles that affect everyone on Earth. Now, what if someone is adopted and they don't know their birth family? They only know their adopted family or their foster families. How can this help those kinds of people?
See, I'm really lucky. I've been blessed with a lot of things. One of those is an adopted daughter. So this is very near and dear to my heart. Adoptees have twice as much, not half as much. They have biological parents for their biological genes, and they have other parents or caregivers for the rest or for other pieces. And I've had many people I've worked with who are adopted, and they say, I got nothing. And I say, where'd your sense of humor come from? How are you different from your adoptive family? Tell me about the way you don't look like them. Why is it that you have things that you know about yourself that they don't? Where'd that come from? We have it all. And so when they don't, what I say to them, when they don't know them, is I want you to start timelining your life. And let's have a look. Because the patterns that are there came from somewhere. In fact, I will tell you, and I'm fortunate, I have a client who is really, really good about saying to me, go share. But I spoke to someone not 2 days ago who said to me, you know, I've struggled with relationships my whole life. And I suddenly realize that I don't feel good enough in relationships. I'm always scared I won't be enough or I'm the bad girl or I did it wrong. And she said to me, for the first time I suddenly realize I'm speaking my biological mother's words. She got pregnant out of wedlock. And I carry that.
Wow.
Yeah, what an incredible love.
Yes, yes. Now you say, our own words, feelings, and mindsets and the meanings we have made of events give us a clear idea of where and how we are stuck or what we are pulled by. Give us some examples, would you please, Judy?
You mean of the meanings that we make of things? Yes. I'll give you a lovely example. I had a lady come in who told me, it's one of my favorite stories. She came in and she said, I'm going to do a piece of work, but I have to do it with my back to the group, the attendees, because I'm very, very ashamed. And I said, okay. She said, see, I really, really want to belong in my family. I really want to belong, but I don't, because all they ever gave me were little drops of love. That's all. I guess they didn't love me much. And I said to her, okay, let's take a look. So she said, my brother belongs. He's really good. He's like they are. They're stoic and they're very unemotional. All I got was just the little drops of love. So we put them up and I said to her, tell me about your mom and dad. They were survivors of the Holocaust. So I said to her, hold on a minute. Could they show emotion? And she said, no, it was probably very dangerous. So I said, yeah, and so your brother took care of that by being similar. But look at what they gave you. They gave you the teeniest little piece that they did have, those little drops of love. And what have you grown them into? And she said to me, oh, I belong. Because I've grown them into incredible things. My family and my children, they have lots of love from me. So I said, look what you did. Of course you belong. And all of a sudden, the meaning that she'd made of those little drops of love went from, I'm not enough, or I don't belong, to look what I can do with that and how I belong.
Fantastic. You changed her life.
She changed her life.
Beautiful. Can we go through the process of discovering a family system and uncovering your systematic sequences, how you would on your own go through them? I think you've described what you can do in a session, in a group scene, but how would a person start out and do the work themselves? Obviously, they should get your book as the guideline, but how might they discover their hidden treasures?
You really want to start asking yourself what you think about different things. What do I think about? What do I tell myself? And I think what you were alluding to as well is systemic sentences, because systemic sentences are the language that runs your family and runs you. All the things that you tell yourself about. Money doesn't grow on trees. Our family is terrible at relationships. You want to start listening to what you say about things, because every single one of us has a very unique language. We don't realize it, that we're tattling on our systems all day long. We're telling the history of who we are and where we came from. And so what you want to do is sit down when you're wanting to grow in a direction and really explore, what do I say about it? Where did that come from? What is it that I want to stop? What is my deep heart's desire? But here's the kicker piece. When you're ready to move into that, that's where the magician comes in. Because what I say to people is, and I'm going to ask you, do you watch horror movies?
Do I?
Yeah.
No. Oh, never.
But
I never do.
No. But you should tell yourself horror stories that you believe about yourself all day long. I'm terrible. I'm stupid. I can't do that. I'm no good. Those are horrible horror stories. But what
this is
the magic, is when you've decided what it is that you want to do, have a look at where it is that you shoot yourself in the foot. What do you tell yourself that's really not good that you believe? I'm useless at. I'm hopeless. I'm no good. I'll never be able to. And listen to your heart and your gut, because they will react. And they'll go, yep, that's right. And so now you've just – done what I call spell weaving. You've just cast a spell on yourself, and that's what I said. You're a powerful magician. So once you decide to move into an area, what you've got to do is look at your library of what you say now and how your body believes it, because you've made that a reality. Then you've got to say to yourself, so what is it that I want? And how do I want to change it? Because you're going to rewire your brain and body, one new thought, one new feeling, one new action at a time. But what you've got to do is you've got to couple that with an elevated emotion. In other words, joy, anticipation, kindness, excitement, enthusiasm. And it's got to make you so jazzed up that you can't stand yourself. But it's got to be true for you. And when your heart gets it, it'll open your brain. When your brain can begin to think about it, it'll settle your gut. And when those three are in agreement, you've just created a new truth. And that's how you start shifting from what is to what's possible, one step at a time.
You also say, patterns that want to rest but can't are pointing towards something in the system that needs to complete or resolve.
Yes. Yes.
So how does one unearth those or go about finding the really hidden ones?
So what you would do is what is it that keeps you from doing whatever it is that you want to do? It just keeps you stuck time and time and time again. Now, you have two ways to go. One is to see where a similar event started that's created this cascade. Or if you don't have that information, to sit with that thing that keeping you limited and timeline when it first began for you. Because when you can timeline when it first began for you, you can then ask yourself, what was happening for me at the time? Is that still the truth for me now? Does it still mean the same thing for me now? Can I change that now? If you don't resolve that, you're going to find yourself U-turning over and over again. Because remember what I said? The system doesn't like exclusions. So until you're looking at that and giving it a place, and resolving it doesn't mean you've got to go and do some wonderful thing. It simply means acknowledging that it's there, acknowledging that it's time for it to rest, giving it a place and thanks for the distance that it brought you, and then moving on. But until you give it its place, you can't move.
And thank you to the Zulu for that.
Absolutely.
You turn us into detectives, basically, because you say, follow the clues. Follow the clues.
Yes.
So we're going to constantly look at clues in our own life to how these patterns and systems and emotional DNA are holding us back. So how do we become detectives?
You really start to look at things that A, make no sense, or B, that you're dogmatic about, or C, that your heart is so pulled to. So things that don't make any sense. Let me give you a really good example of that. What did I used to say? There was something. Oh, yes, I used to say, you know what? I'm making candy. I learned to become a chocolatier. I'm making candy to keep my family safe. Who knows why I ever chose candy making? It's a ridiculous thing, but life is sweet. I guess I'm the only one who ever did it. Until I discovered, actually, no. I had an aunt that was forgotten about who'd made candy during the Second World War, and that money kept her family alive. But she'd been excluded.
Aha.
So it's the little things like that. Or saying to somebody, who did I say to my mom? When I got really stressed at one point, this was way back, and I said to her, I don't understand it. I'm not an anxious person by nature. You're not an anxious person by nature, and nobody in our family's anxious. And she said to me, where'd you get that from? And I said, what? She said to me, yeah, I had a lot of anxiety growing up, And my mother had tremendous anxiety growing up. But it was her mother that had the most anxiety after great-grandfather dropped dead and left her with 16 kids.
16?
16. She really believed in go forth and multiply. So there's the family anxiety. So here's another piece that's really important for everybody to know, because it'll explain this easily. You don't just have your nervous system. There is also a family nervous system. And when you get jangled, start having a look at who else in the family gets triggered by that sort of thing. You have a family nervous system.
Wow, now that's an important concept. You, now you have, you've turned us into detectives. We're acting on Zulu principles, and now we get to be miners because we're going to mine for some gold, and I assume that that's part of the gold that we're looking for is the triggers in the family that can be also ours, and we can look at that. Tell us a little bit about mining.
Absolutely. So when we talk about mining, people always come to me, they come to me with their junk pile, which means all that is they've got a whole pile of treasure that they haven't sorted through. So people will come to me and they'll say, what did somebody say to me the other day? It was about 2 days ago as well. Yeah, I really, really struggle with relationships because I keep dating these men who abandon me. That's right. And I said to her, where'd that come from? She said, I don't know. So we were talking and talking and talking, and I said to her, there's something about this. This is a gift for you, and I need to understand how. Well, we were talking, and I said to her, tell me about your father, and she burst into tears. And she said, we left from another country, and I was forbidden to speak about him ever again.
Oh.
And I said to her, but you sure did, didn't you? And she said, no. And I said, yep, every single one of those men that you dated and you left. Every single one of those men. And she went, oh, my goodness. And I said to her, but here's the gift, two gifts. Number one, your father gave you a gift. How big are you at including everybody? And she would, I always include people. I said, yeah, because you keep giving him his place. He gave you the gift of being the inclusionist.
Amazing that you could find that in there. You're the mystic. You have the crystal ball. You can find amazing things in this. I mean, can the average person do this? You have this talent for always finding the pony, you know?
Oh, everybody can do it. All you've got to do is listen to your own language and your thoughts and your feelings. What we've been programmed with growing up was that we're sufferers. We were born to suffer. You're supposed to suffer. You should live a reasonable life. You should die well. And if you die well, you get seat L34 at the top when you go there, which is junk. We were
right.
Not taught the other half of our language, which is you're capable, you're smart, you can do incredible things, and you are a remarkable life. So we don't always know how to see that. But when we begin to see that, we start to move in the direction of discovering how incredible we are and how capable we are, and we can all see it. Your language, when you hear things about yourself, think about it this way. How good are you at receiving compliments?
Me personally?
Yep.
Oh, great now, but I used to not be. I had
but
to train myself.
Right. Here's the reason why you need to listen to compliments. People are giving you information about yourself all the time. But we've been taught to filter out compliments. So when you plot a graph, it is a horribly inaccurate graph. You have no idea when you're going up or when you're going down. In fact, mostly you only consider that you're going down. So we've got to learn to listen to our language, but listen to the positive piece. And every time that there is a negative piece, You've got to say to yourself, and what more is possible here? What am I missing that is trying to become a good reality for me?
You talk about the assumptions pattern, and I really had to laugh out loud, Judy. It was great. You said that, you know, frequently spouses will say to the other one, well, if you loved me, you'd know what I need. And I thought, you know, yeah, and you have a lot to say about that. Share that with us, will you?
I would love to. I'll tell you where one of those was from my mom and dad. My mom was is a master gardener, and she would do the garden every week. And on a Friday was her gardening day. And Dad would come home, and the ritual was every day when Dad came home, Mom and Dad would disappear into the room for 10 minutes. He'd get out of his work clothes. He'd come out in his play clothes, and then he belonged to us. On a Friday, inevitably, Mom would be sad because she'd done this beautiful garden work and he wouldn't notice. And he'd feel bad. And her thing was, if you loved me. And then she said she sat down one day and she thought, what do I want? I want him to notice the love and the care that I've put into this garden. So that afternoon he came home, got into his play clothes and came out, and she said to him, come with me. Look what I did today. Look here. And she showed him everything, and he turned around and he said, I could cry. I'm so grateful. I don't have to be the bad guy anymore. This is beautiful. And that became the new ritual. When she could put down the assumption that he didn't notice and share with him, it pulled them all the way close. And we assume so many things that destroy us. One of the things I make all my clients write down, because they'll say, well, you know, my boss didn't see me, and I assume he doesn't think I do much. And I make them all write down one sentence on a sticky note and put it on their computer. 99% of the time, it's not about you.
In big letters, hopefully.
Big letters with an exclamation mark at the end.
Now, Judy, are patterns always easy to spot, or are there some tricky ones that we need to have a special key to get into?
There are layers. So you will spot them, and they'll unlayer for you and unlayer. But it's once you've pulled one, you really do begin to notice all the other ones. You'll see a surface one, and then the next one comes up, and you go, oh, my goodness, are you kidding me? Now, here's one that's just lovely, by the way. So my mother was a reflexologist. She was just drawn to reflexology. Never could understand why. And, I mean, we had all of the family stories and all of that sort of thing, but she never could get it. And one day she was sitting doing a client's feet, and she started to laugh, and the client said, and now? She said, I just got the joke. And the client said, okay. She said, when my grandfather used to come in off the fields from a long day's work, my grandmother's act of love was to take his shoes off, bathe his feet in water, and rub them. And here I am, three generations later.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. What an insight. Yeah. What an insight for her to have.
Oh, yeah. Or my adopted daughter, who, of course, and again, this was Mom's insight, not ours, but my adopted daughter, who is a physician, she's one of the most delightful beings on the planet. She really is. But she has this habit. Oh, my goodness. We cannot go into a shop and buy food before she's read the label. She reads the label from top to bottom. It drives us crazy. And then one day my mom started laughing, and she said, of course she does that. I knew her mother. Her mother died when she was young. I knew her mother. Her mother was a food technologist. Her job was, yeah. And so we carry those love patterns everywhere, and sometimes we think they're limiting patterns, but they're really not. They're love patterns waiting to be decoded.
Well, my best friend, Peggy, she saved her marriage at one point because she realized that her husband didn't bring her roses. He didn't do all of that that she craved, but he did build her a deck, and he did make sure that all of the sprinkler system worked. So he wanted to please her in different ways, and when she recognized that was his way of showing love, she was able to turn her anger around and feel loved.
Exactly. It's beautiful. So what she did was she took the old code in her family, which was bring roses and chocolates, and anything that didn't fit the bring roses and bring chocolates was out the window until she discovered that decks are gorgeous too.
Can you tell us the story? One of my favorites in your book is Carol and the Lamp.
Carol and the Lamp. You'll have to refresh me just a little bit, and,
okay,
and I'll
Carol's
be happy
boss,
to do it.
When he died, he left her the lamp, and she wanted to keep it,
oh,
but the company said, no, no, the lamp is ours. You can't keep it.
That's right. And that boiled down to her mom, as I recall. I remember this. It's a beautiful story. So she wanted to keep it because her whole life she'd never been able to keep what she'd been given, because her mother had made her give to other children because they had plenty, but she could never hold on to something for her. And it was when she realized that again she was being told somebody else needed it because she had, that she finally said, my turn.
Yes, she had to give her favorite doll away, and then when the family would receive Christmas presents, they had to rewrap them and give them to another part of the family. They could never keep anything.
That's right, because they didn't have enough. The others didn't, and they had plenty, was her mother's words, except they really didn't. And nobody told her. She only realized very much later they didn't, and Mom didn't want to be shamed.
So here's the magic question. How do we stop the DNA from passing down to our children and the next generation?
We mindfully choose what we pass down, and we mindfully choose to pass down joy. We mindfully choose to have conversations instead of putting things, sweeping things under the carpet. We tell our children that there were miscarriages, that there were adoptions, that there were all sorts of things, just the same way that we would tell them about chickenpox and measles. We don't keep secrets. Keeping secrets, you know what secrets do? Not only, as Chris Rock says, do they rot the soul, but those little secrets keep resurfacing. So if you've got secrets, you may need to find a way to share those. But please don't give your children nightmares.
right. Yeah, modify them, monitor them. All right, now here's something that some of my clients have said to me. Well, it's all well and good to tell them how great they are and how fantastic they are and compliment them all the time. I didn't get those compliments, but that's okay. I can compliment my children and tell them how they are so fantastic. But then they turn around and they act like little brats. They think they own the world. What have I created? Have I created a narcissist?
No, what you've done is you didn't do your work. Until you believe that you are incredible and you get it. And by the way, when you know that, it is a very humble feeling. It's not an out there narcissistic feeling. It is a very humble and peaceful feeling. That's what you can pass on to your kids. But guess what? When you're just telling it to them all the time, they know, excuse me, that you are BSing them. So you can tell it all day long.
Yes. So it's about mindfully looking at your stuff, getting rid of the secrets and facing that, and then really coming from a place of complimenting them, from meaning it so that they feel it and it's reciprocal and emotionally exchanged.
And understand that the secret had its place and its purpose. That is probably one of the most beautiful pieces of this work. There is no judgment here. There is simply what belongs and how we can use it. There is no judgment.
you will single-handedly put most therapists out of business with this work.
You know what? I'm going to push back on that and alter it a bit. I'm hoping that the alternative is that I will single-handedly equip therapists to go very deep and very broad in a very different way and surprise themselves and their clients.
Ah, see, that's fantastic. That is just incredible. How generous of you. So let me remind our listeners who were probably sitting at their computer poised at Amazon because they want your book, Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint by Judy Wilkins-Smith. And that's where you can find Judy at judywilkins-smith.com. Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint, and then you too can go all about disentangling your generational inheritance that you may or may not want to claim. So I think, Judy, you are just remarkable. The work you do is incredible, and I want to leave the last 5 minutes for you to tell us more things that you want us to know that maybe aren't in the book, to talk to us about what's going on, and just decode some things for us right now that we all need to hear.
So, yeah, one of the things that I would say is also there is an invitation to see me at a live event because that is extremely life-changing. People say this all the time. What do I want you to know? I want to go back to there is nobody who cannot do this. There is nobody who cannot change their lives, and it is incredibly important that you recognize it begins with one new thought, one new feeling, one new action that you say yes to in your head, in your heart, in your gut, and you commit to it. When you do that, you will pull clear of the systemic trance. You will no longer be reliving ancient history, and you will finally find the life that you know is just in front of you. I always say to people, beyond brick walls, there is an incredible world, the likes of which you have never begun to imagine, and it's yours. It's not rocket science. We were never not meant to do this. This was part of the game. Decode it and own it.
That's just incredible. Incredible. And I know that our producer, Hercules, is sitting in the back there going, wait a minute, I have all these questions. I know Hercules is loving you. So, Hercules, what would you like to ask or talk to Judy about?
I'm amazed that the system that she's developed, and I feel it will definitely help me in my own ancestor work. Some of the conclusions I've come to myself over the years, but some of them were fresh and new, and I intend to try them out as quickly as possible.
Yay.
Well, that's incredible. And he has ancestors from the Pantheon. This man lives on Mount Olympus, so that's going to be something. Some family system for you to work through. That is great. Well, Judy, you've been extraordinary. I've loved every single second with you, and I thank you for being on the show, for helping us heal. This is The Art of Healing, and I think people can do that through your book. It's written in such an easy way. You don't even think you're doing the work. You're reading along. You tell us stories. You bring us into the conversation. You are a remarkable writer and a fantastic human being. The book is Decoding Your Emotional Blueprint, Judy Wilkins-Smith, and judywilkinsmith.com. There's a dash in there. Find her, go attend a live event, change your life. And Judy, with deep gratitude, thank you for your time and thank you for sharing who you are with us. You are a gem.
Keck, thank you so much for having me. Thank you for your kind words. It's been such a pleasure.
Indeed. Thank you so much. I'm going to turn this over to Hercules and Mount Olympus. And everyone, have a blessed, happy, joyful evening.
Thank you very much, Kat, and thank you very much, Judy. This was an entertaining and insightful and uplifting hour, and again, I thank you for it. I'm sure our listeners will thank you for it as well. Thanks to all who have listened tonight or who will listen to this program on demand. Until next time, for Mount Olympus, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Kat. That was such fun.
Oh, you are such fun. I just love you to bits. Thank you for the work you do and the good you do in the world. It just makes my heart sing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I'm sending hugs.
All right, darling. Cheers.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.